Today's Mishnah Masechet Taharot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is Perek Tet, Mishnah Chet. Well, okay, so we've been following along the process, and by the way, Ira sent a beautiful video, I think it's on the daf, right, of his actual processing of the olives, which is very, very sweet, very worthwhile to see. So, of course, we didn't have the conveyor belts and the automatic sprayers and so on in those days. So we've been following along with these olives a little bit in an old-fashioned way. So we took these olives. They were in the ma'atan, and they ended up being very mushy in that ma'atan. However, there's always olives that are not as ripe as others. They're, you know, maybe at the bottom of the tree or whatever. They're at the side of the tree that doesn't get as much sun. So there's always going to be differences in the olives. Some of them are nice and ripe and ready to get warmed in the heating of the oxidation in the matan, but others are still going to take their time. And we talked about those issues in the Mishnah before, in which you had the olives weren't quite ripe, and you put them first in the house in order for them to start rotting, and then they get soft enough. Then you bring them up to the roof. Now we're talking about people that don't have patience for that kind of long-term solution. They want a simple solution. The simple solution is to crush them and to cut them up into little pieces, and then it's easy to actually press them. So very often, and Ira did this as well, very often, after they've been in the matan, they are now moved on into a crusher of some kind, right? So you put them in a rechayim, same type of stone type of thing that you would use for your wheat, and you put them through that, and that crushes the olives into small pieces. Now, once that's done, so then even though they've been in the ma'atan, and we said it in the time that they're ready to be moved out of the ma'atan, they're 100% going to be mukhshar lekabel tuma, because at that point, the mukhal is for sure considered to be part of the mashke. And then we take a look and we find a sheretz. So we find a dead sheretz inside of the grinder, in the rechayim itself. And it's right there on top of these olives. What happens there is that since the olives have been cut up, and they're no longer one solid mass, which we had when they were in the ma'atan. And remember that that was the whole point, that when they're in the ma'atan, we view them as being the om. The om means that single crushed, I shouldn't say crushed, mushed clumping of these olives. And we talked about in the Mishnah earlier about what happens if you want to take some out, you want to just do a very brief run and so on. So they're no longer mechuber. Okay, in this case, they're no longer in the ma'atan, and they've been cut up. So what that means is that they are not considered to be mechuber any longer, obviously, which means you do not have a shear of a kibetza. In which case, even if one of the olives is mekabel tuma, because you don't need a kibetza to be mekabel tuma, but it cannot be mitame anything else because it doesn't have a shear of a kibetza. So therefore, even if you find a sheretz, which ought to be matami, and it's in there next to these olives, lying on these olives, touching them in the rechayim, you don't have to worry about everything being tami. Ein tami ela mikom maga'o. So since we do not have a shear, in this case, even though they once were connected, they're no longer connected. Therefore, there's olives that are directly touching the sheretz, of course, are tami. But anything that only touched those olives are tahar, because you cannot be metame ochlin, ochlin or not metame ochlin, unless they have a shear of a kibetza. Now, what about if there was so much mohal that hayaha mashke mihalech? So if the whole thing is basically immersed in this mohal, so that everything is basically damp, and it's all as if there's liquid covering the whole thing. It doesn't mean it has to be literally immersed, but there's no area that's dry, so that there's enough, if you touch it, that it's going to be wet all along the olives. So in that case, the Sheretz was Matame the Mashka, if the Teretz is Meshame the Mashka, remember, becomes Rishon. It makes all of the olive stomach throughout. Now, let's go back to the Matan. So we haven't taken it out of the Matan. And we have the same situation with the Sheretz. What happens over there is that in order to keep things clean, what they would generally do is they would take the branches that the olives had been attached to before, which are now covered with leaves, and they would put that on top of the olives as a protection. Well, obviously, the leaves are not mekabel tuma because they're not really suitable for achila. So there, we find, in fact, a sheretz on top of the leaves that were put on top of the olives, not in the crusher, but in the matan. So what do we do then? Well, Yish'alu ha-badadim lomar lo naganu. You ask the badadim if they can say to you that they absolutely did not touch this. Now, even though the badadim are ame'aret, but remember that the halacha is that if you were metaher your bad, so now you're doing a completely kosher run in order that it should be used by Kohanim, people who are makbid on chulin shenatzu ataras truma, or you want to use it for the Beis HaMikdash. In those cases, the Amoretz is also makbid, and once you've put him in the mikveh and you've made sure that there's not going to be any negia of tuma, then even if there was something that might have touched him, he is believed to say that he didn't touch. And therefore, even though he's an Amoretz, since you're doing a badatz run of these olives, so he is believed to say that he wasn't negia. The thing is, though, that if this, whatever sheretz it was, even one hair of that sheretz attached to it is touching and goes over the leaves that we're supposed to be protecting, and they end up touching the om itself, and that, of course, is considered all to be one, so then the entire thing becomes tamei, because as we said, before you're going to crush them up, in that case, they're considered to be a kezias, a kebetza, because they're all mechuber, and of course, together, they certainly are a share of kebetza, and therefore the whole thing will definitely be tummy. Mishnah Tet. What are we going to do when we have to leave Taharis behind?
I'm sorry, Rebbe, can Rebbe translate om again?
The om is the mass of olives that are in the Ma'atan, which we view as a single solid piece of olive, as if it's one olive.
Okay. It's a fascinating word. It relates to ummah. It would be that same thing as
right, ummah. Yeah. It's the same idea. A group of separated things that have become clumped together,
come together
into one.
Right. And we find mikvahs right at the entrance of ancient Bate Bad from Beit Sheni in the time of the Mishnah. Mamash, the stairs going down, mikvah here, and you walk into the processing area.
Wow, wonderful. Okay, that makes sense. Does it have a badatz thing on it? Okay, we better keep Ori's fingers out of that matan. You can never tell what happens if it gets caught in that crusher. Good grief. So, Mishnah Tet. Nimtza al gabei perudim, or some of it is a perudim. So what about if the dead sheretz was found on a clump? So now, what happened over here is that you have now separated them out, and you are going, they're no longer part of one single om, and you now have pieces that have been broken off. They're sitting, though, on top of that om. So they're in touch with that om. And there, the sheretz is nogea to a kebetza of prudim. Now, what this means is, according to the way the Gro learns it and the Rash learns it, I think this is the most reasonable approach to the Mishnah, because otherwise it involves creating new gezeiros derabanan and giving them special dinim, which, you know, doesn't have any mukkar in the Gemara, and you're just assuming that that's what the Mishnah means. So the simplest approach is that, remember that we had in Ohalos, we had the halacha that if various things are touching simultaneously, each one of them without the shear, but they're touching the same object simultaneously, then you take a look at the total mass of what you're touching. So let's say if you would have a Chatzi Beitza here and a Chatzi Kibetza here that are touching the same time some Eichlin, so then the Eichlin is considered to be Makabel Tuma from a total of a Kibetza. Well, the Gra says that's what it's referring to over here. The Sheretz is only touching these Prudim, right? So these Prudim are all going to be Tame, but none of them have a Shear of a Kibetza. However, these Prudim are on top of the Om. And therefore, the Om is now in touch with five of these little clumps, each one smaller than a kibetza, maybe significantly smaller, but when they're all touching the clump, the Om, so then they're going to be metame as if they are kibetza. And therefore, everything becomes tame, not only the prudim, but even the Om. Because the prudim for sure were mekabel tuma, because you don't need a shear of a kibetza to be mekabel tuma. And since they are now all touching simultaneously, they're touching the Om, it's mitzarev, the Om is mitzarev them to be mekabel tuma, and the whole jazz becomes tame. But suppose these prudim, suppose these clumps over here are on top of other clumps, and they're not in direct contact with the Om. So they're prudim al gabe prudim, and they don't directly come onto a simultaneous touching of an object that can be mitzarev them. So in that case, afa pishi nogea bekibetza, so even though there's plenty of these little pieces, and together they're definitely a kibetza, but you cannot make anything else tame, just they themselves become tame. So eno tame ela makom maga'o. The only thing that would be tame then are those clumps that directly touched the sheretz itself. Because since nothing joins them and nothing is mitzarif them, so they remain ocho pochos mikibetza. Obviously, they themselves are tame, but nothing else is. Furthermore, suppose you just have a sheretz on the ground right next to the machinery. So nimtza bein akotolizeisim. So there's no reason in that case to be choshesh that anything came in contact with the actual sheretz. So we're not chayish for something outside of its place, as we've seen many times. The place where the tumah is found is the place where it's been all along, and therefore we don't have to be choshesh. Now, how about after these zeitim were removed from the ma'atan, and they were brought up to the roof, lies in the mishnayos that we had earlier, where maybe you wanted to dry them out and have them as snacks or whatever, but you bring them up to the roof, then you find a sheretz up there on the roof. So the din over there is you do not have to assume that that means that the sheretz was dragged up there and you didn't notice. It was dragged up there with these olives and it had actually been in the matan all along. No such chashat. And therefore, whatever olives are left back in the matan are considered to be torim. So nimtza begag, ha-matan tohor, and we're not cheshesh, because remember we have that klal by tuma, kan nimtza, kan haya. Or put another way in Gavi language, is ein marzikin tuma mi makom lemakom. I don't think you have to put Ori away because I think you already wrote this down, but you can check afterwards. So there'd be no problem. But suppose after you take these 18 up to the roof, you come back and you look in your ma'atan, and you find a sheretz in the ma'atan. So now the question is, was the sheretz in the ma'atan the whole time? And you just didn't notice it because you were taking out little bits at a time. So then we have to be worried that there's even the zeitim that are up on the roof that I brought up before, they're all considered to be tameh, because even though we're not marzikim mimakom lemakom, we are marzikim tuma mizman lizman. So in other words, even though we only discovered the tuma now, we don't say, well, we only found it now, and therefore kan in time nimtza and kan in time haya. No, we talk about space. It was here, but it was here from before. So therefore, we have to be choshesh that, in fact, it was actually there. And because of that, the olives that are up on the roof are going to be tome because machzikin tuma mizman lezman. That word, machzikin tuma mizman lezman, is not found anywhere in the Gemara or anywhere in the Rishonim. However, it's a creation, as far as I can make out, of the Tiferes Yisrael, who is very good at that kind of thing. And it sounds great. So I figured we could use it because it clarifies not to make that mistake of ein machzikin tuma mimakom lemakom, that you shouldn't make the mistake of thinking that that has to do with time. Okay, now the truth is that this is the simplest approach to the sugya. However, there are Rishonim that learn that the issue is that if it was in the Gog, the reason that we say that the Matan is okay is because to bring the olives up to the Gog, you put them in a container that you were able to carry. And therefore, you would have seen, if there was a sheretz in there, you're carrying it up, you would have seen it. Masha Enkein, if you find it later in the Matan, then you have to be afraid that maybe it was there from before. So it's more of a logistical kind of issue. Okay, it's also a sfara that fits very nicely. So nimtza b'matan, then agag tameh. Now, suppose you find a sheretz, but the sheretz is now completely dried out and it's all burned by the sun, or maybe there was extra heat in the room, whatever it is, and it's no longer metame because it no longer is a viable sheretz, so it's all dried out, it's as if it's no longer a bal chai, and you find it on these olives. Now, the sheretz in that state is not going to be metame. Same thing is true if you find a matlit, which is muhuma. So muhuma, some learn, means also that it was singed, and it's no longer a viable matlit to be considered a beged, and therefore it would no longer be mitame. Others learn muhuma doesn't mean singed; it means that it's bolui, it's all used up, and therefore it's got so few threads. Threadbare, as we call it in English. It's threadbare, and because of that, it doesn't have a din of carrying tumah any longer. But whatever, it's the same idea. Something was once tameh, and now I find it there, but it's in a state where it cannot be metameh. So the din over there is that it is tohar, and it's not going to be metameh, even the zeitim that it's touching, because we do not assume that it was here earlier. Because, and at that time, it was still in good shape, and it was able to be metame. Why? Because of the klal. Kol ha-tameot kisha'at mitziatam. Did you find something that's metame? Then you have to worry about it. Do you find something here that is not metame? You don't have to worry about it. Even though it clearly is a sheretz, and at one time it was metame when it died, but this is part of the klal that we had all the way back in the third parak. It was part of the opening idea, which is, okay, Rabotai.
Rabbi, our girsa, the girsa I have in the regular shas is mehuha.
Yes. Yeah, that depends again on the girsa, how you read it. Okay, Rabotai. But the idea is the same. Whether it means it's singed, it's threadbare, it's all used up. All the same idea. It's no longer metame. Okay, we start, Bezrat Hashem, a new perek, huh?
Hadron Allah,
perek Zesim. That's quite a perek. All right, everyone. See you, Bezrat Hashem Yisbarach, tomorrow. Waiting for all hell to break loose, if you could trust that guy. Go to...